Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined in-house. He's wearing his stupid-ass fedora in my house by Harrison Fagan. And we have Pete Zayas of The Athletic and of Spectrum and of Laker Film Room. And like, have you picked up a job between the last time I talked to you and now?
I have not. I got one more kind of in discussions right now, but I'm going to, you know, do this till it kills me. So
it's going to.
It's going to.
So like 3 months then.
We'll have had a good run.
No, again, congratulations on this as well. I can't wait to see your NBA coverage as well. If you want to hand me over you guys are sending out a new promo code, right?
We are. The URL at the end of it was creeping me out. It says, it's like, you know, you're 40% off The Athletic and whatnot, which is true and you should sign up. But the end of the URL is Welcome Zayas. And that just like really weirds me out because I don't really go by Pete Zayas, right? Like Everyone knows me at this point.
Like, I don't want to criticize The Athletic, but I'm saying like they could have consulted with me and I would have told them it's definitely Welcome Coach Pete. Like.
No, the promo code should have been "What's up, Laker fans?" Like that's what it, or you know, "What's up, fans?" or something like that.
Yeah.
But today's show is not going to be all about that. We actually have one question that I definitely wanted to start on, and I've had this note in my office for about as long as I've had this office.
And this is saying something because Anthony never takes notes or prepares.
I never keep anything. No, yeah. I why would I work hard? So we are going to start with a fun question. We have to talk about the Lakers' last game to their loss against the Toronto Raptors. Just a couple notes on that. I want to talk about Kyle Kuzma, and then we'll see where else this all takes us. But as you guys knew heading into a Lakers podcast, Pete, you are an older brother. Mm-hmm. Harrison, you are an older brother.
Of three, yeah.
I am myself an older brother. And a listener way back in the day asked about, you know, like the older brother relationships that you see and on the teams and stuff like that. And I told Pete, damn, next time I get you, me, and Harrison together, we need to talk about like our older brother stories because we all have them. So I'm kind of thrusting this upon you guys. So I'll start. I was playing ping pong with my the middle brother, Andrew, and he's six years younger than me. And I gave him, we were playing ping pong, and I gave him, in a game to 15, I gave him a 12-point lead to start. And he quickly got two straight points. So I was down game point to zero immediately. I was finally able to fight my way back, and we were playing in my folks' garage at the time. And they had like a lawn chair sitting there next to us because, you know, they didn't have garage specific chairs or furniture. And so I wind up beating him 16-14, and he throws his paddle. And I, to this day, I have no idea how this happened. He throws his paddle and it bounces up off of the chair, rotates back up at him, catches him square between the eyes right here. And I'm telling you, I died.
I thought you were going to say it hit you and no. Then he died.
No, he's had, we have cases of like that too. But so he throws his paddle and it hits him, catches him square right between the eyes. And he starts crying his eyes out. And we're all older brothers. So if younger brother starts crying, we're in trouble, even if we didn't do anything.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yes.
And so I'm like, well, shit. It's hilarious. I'm probably going to be grounded for this, but it was funny as hell. So I walk inside. Or no, Andrew runs inside. Out comes mom. Fred, what did you do? And I was like, I swear to God, mom, he threw this paddle, it hit this chair, and it bounced up and it hit him in the face. And my mom's like, oh, come on. No. Yeah. Okay, sure, Fred.
Did he bail you out?
So my mom pulls Andrew back out and she says, Andrew, Fred says that you threw this paddle and it hit the chair and it hit you right back in the face. I don't believe him. What happened? And he was like crying. He's like bawling. I think his nose was bleeding.
So this is the perfect time for me to jump in. I have a nose bleeding story. I am 8 years older than Tommy is.
Uh-huh.
And so one day I'm about 18 years old. I was visiting my parents and he was about 10. and we're playing video games in his room, and we're like, I'm beating him because I'm still, you know, I got my motor skills are a little better than his at this point. And I'm beating him and he's getting upset, and he hits me in the shoulder or something like that. And I kind of like just nudge him a little bit. I swear to God, it was not like violent or anything. Well, he hit the back of his head on on the wall, and like, it wasn't hard. It was just like he made contact with the wall, and for some reason that would like trigger nosebleeds. This one was profuse. Oh, no. It looked like somebody had been murdered. And exactly what you said about like having to explain, like, you're not going to believe the real version of what happened. My dad is a 5'1" former drill sergeant in the Army who's got just the scariest voice and persona, which you'd have to have in order to be a
To be a 5'1" drill sergeant. Yeah,
he's a very intimidating dude. And he comes in just like, I mean, he'd left us alone for like 2 hours. We hadn't seen him. Of course, he walks in as Tommy's gushing blood. There's blood on the walls, on the bed.
It looks like a scene from Dexter.
Like, I get like 2 seconds into my, what happened was, and I think the statute of limitations have run out on him since then, but he threw my ass up against the wall. The fuck did you do to my ass? I don't know. Can we cuss on this?
Of course.
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck did you do? You know, and I'm like, I'm like 18. I'm a grown man, quote unquote, at this point. I'm like,
didn't feel like one.
I swear to God, it wasn't me. And this motherfucker, Tommy, doesn't stand up for me at all because he's pissed that I'm beating with the game. So he doesn't tell what actually happens.
Fortunately, Andrew helped me out. Andrew came back and was like, nose bleeding and everything, tears like gushing from his eyes. And mom asks what happened, and he tells her exactly what happened. And mom still didn't believe him. He's like, Andrew, did Fred threaten you into telling me this story?
I was going to say, like, did you stand behind her doing the throat slashing gesture? Like if you thought the ping pong battle was bad.
Could never do as much damage as he figured out what he did to himself. So, like, he was nothing I could say to scare him. But, yeah, he wound up giving himself up. And it also helped that we had a witness there. My best man at my wedding was in the room when that happened, and so I would have lucked out with that respect. But yeah, that's what's your story here?
As I think most people that listen to the show probably think that I'm like a pretty calm person, like pretty like well, you know, like I had a temper when I was younger and like when I was still growing up. And I think I was around 16 at this time. And one of my brothers I honestly don't even remember what he did, but I was very upset with him, chasing him through the house. I think he was just being annoying, and I was chasing him through the house, and he threw when your younger brothers are running away from you, they sometimes try to close the door on you as they're running. So he threw the door behind him. I literally ran straight through it. I did not stop to open it because I couldn't stop in time. Just
like
straight.
Kool-Aid Man?
Not like the Kool-Aid Man. Like the door went flying off the hinges. And like I ran straight through it. The door handle somehow hit me in the balls as I was going through. So I get up to like chase after him, and I made it about 3 steps before the pain kicked in, and then I just hit the ground.
You always have like 5 seconds or so.
Yeah, so then I was like, I was really mad, but I couldn't chase him at that point. And then I get a call from my friend that his mom's outside to pick me up. Like I was going over to his house that day. Yeah. So I go out there, I leave with them. My dad comes home like probably 20 minutes later. I get a call from him just screaming at me for breaking a door and then leaving the house. He drove like 30 minutes from our house to Santa Ana to pick me up immediately, like right as I was basically pulling up to my friend's house, like pulls me into the car and just drove me home and screamed at me the whole way. And so that is that's probably like that's my older brother story. So I guess the lesson of this was that like LeBron is probably bullying AD on some level.
Yeah, AD probably hurt his shoulder by throwing a ping pong paddle at himself.
It was a stop hitting yourself situation is what I think that is with his shoulder.
LeBron punched him too hard in the shoulder, and he's like, you better blame that on a missed dunk.
Right. Well, we'll never know because the Lakers don't like giving out injury information.
Oh, God.
So Let's take a quick second. That was fun. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about the Lakers. I do want to talk about the injury stuff. I had forgotten about that at the beginning of the show. I want to talk about Kyle Kuzma, and then, you know, we have a few questions here as well. So hang tight. All right, so we are back. I am rubbing my hands. I'm all kinds of excited because I get to criticize the Lakers.
Yeah, again. The Lakers finally lost. So Anthony is like, my brand is alive.
We are good.
I can finally yell at this team for doing something stupid again.
We're back, baby. That's not actually how it is. It kind of is, but it isn't. I want to start with this whole process the Lakers are going about relaying injury information to fans. And the way that they're handling Anthony Davis specifically, he gave that quote that was incredibly ominous. Gave this really dark quote that basically painted it as if he's feeling pain every single play, right? He says, there isn't a play that goes by that I don't feel a twinge in my shoulder. And to which every reasonable Laker fan's response was, what the actual hell are you doing on a basketball court right now?
He said that. And so, like, there aren't a lot of nights where I'm able to get into good enough position for Davis's scrum where, like, I can actually hear him while he's talking. I usually have to get it off my recorder later.
Right.
But, like, I was close enough for that one, and I heard him say it, and I think my eyes went, like I just literally, you went full like, my eyes, yeah, I went full, like, eyes wide. Like, I was like, wait, what? It hurts when? Every play? Like,
right.
Yeah.
So, talk me off the ledge here. I'm saying he should sit for the next, like, month or so.
I don't know about the next month, but it would be good to sit him in these upcoming games where against kind of the bottom feeders. It's funny. The Lakers have actually had the sixth toughest schedule in the NBA so far. So much for that, you know, easy start. Obviously, they're 7-2, and that's great.
It's funny how people aren't taking that into account in analyzing the season to this point.
Yeah.
Oh, you've had an easy schedule. We actually,
it's like, actually the Suns are good now.
Yeah,
so
yeah, like, well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, they've got this tough game tomorrow coming up against the Suns in Phoenix. I think they'll be fine against the Warriors on the second night of a back-to-back, but it really would be great to get AD some minutes, you know, resting in one of those games. Mm-hmm. I also think that probably explains the drop-off in his free throw attempts. I've noticed a pretty large discrepancy in how aggressive he's been at and around the rim. And yeah, man, like, look, I get he's wanting to make everybody happy and that he's in a new place and they want to get off to a great start. But we need that dude. So, yeah, man, in the next couple of weeks, we need to find those spots where he can just get some rest.
What do you think about – so of the three of us that are having this conversation right now, Harrison, you are the closest to a journalist. Right. Somebody who actually wanted to be a journalist.
To a journalist. That was such an underhanded, like.
Well, you still come from a somewhat non-traditional background.
I'd be more underhanded. I thought you were going to say he was the closest to being afflicted with terminal minor injuries like AD.
That's honestly where I thought he was going too. Like,
yeah. I was like, how do you deal with like consistent and omnipresent pain? That's not my actual question.
No, so I was actually I'm not going to say who asked me, but in the locker room last night, I was actually asked by a fellow reporter, like, they're like, you have long arms. like when you shoot versus when you go up like this, like with the shoulder injury, which one hurts more? And I was explaining it, breaking down as if I am Anthony Davis and have his proportions.
I need to know who asked that question. I need to know. We'll get that off camera or off the record. But the question I was going to ask, though, is with your journalistic background, the way that injury information is being relayed to the public, in my opinion, seems incredibly flawed. And, like, this idea that Rajon Rondo has been day-to-day for a month. Right. Mo Wagner was day to day for his entire stint as a Laker. Lonzo Ball was considered day to day despite having a grade 3 ankle sprain, which usually requires surgery. LeBron James at one point last year had to clear the air and say that he was going to actually miss another week or two, not be considered day to day. And so, like, my question is, with you, the way that you handle this information in writing about it and covering this team, like, this feels pretty out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it's this interesting thing because you don't want to speculate on it. You don't want to be like, oh, well, they're lying.
But they welcome the speculation.
You know what I mean? Well, but what I'm saying is, like, as a journalist and as someone who is, like, trying to traffic in just what we know, like, I don't want to go too far down the path of, like, okay, could it be this? Could it be X, Y, or Z? What's really wrong? Are they lying to us? Are they misleading us? Is this true? Like, but the thing to me that is, like, you can go at this with facts, and this is the way that I approached it when I was writing about Rondo this morning for Silver Screen Roll, a Lakers website that you can visit.
And I occasionally make appearances at as
well.
And that Pete left with no regard for any of the life that's still there.
We'll get into that later. How I approached it was, like, I went back and I looked at, you know, how were they first talking about Rondo? Rondo was a game time decision for the season opener against the Clippers.
Yeah.
They are 9 games into the season now, and he is still being listed as, like, day-to-day, could go.
Now he's
and
questionable. They were like, hey, he's now questionable.
What? Yeah, he got upgraded from doubtful to questionable, which is, like, I get that this stuff is complicated, and Frank Vogel talked about it last night, too. Like, with soft tissue injuries, you just don't know. Like, you really have to keep seeing how they respond to it. But I also, like, I kind of understand where the frustration comes from you as someone who has to write about this and, like, and analyze it and wants to know, from fans who want to know, like, if I'm paying to go to a game or I'm scheduling to watch a game, like, who is going to be available? Like, they want to understand that. People who are gambling on the game, like, people who are setting gambling lines. Mm-hmm. Like, there are a lot
TV
of people.
Partners.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who have benefits to have a more straightforward timeline on this stuff. And I just think that it's hard not to think that they couldn't have, like, said, you know, person's going to be out for a certain amount of time and, like, given more a more definitive timeline and then hope that the person, like, came back sooner than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that seems like the logical way to go about things.
And again,
set a conservative timeline, set expectations at a realistic place, and then if that person exceeds those expectations, they look better. Whereas, like, there's no way for an athlete to look good here because fans just hear day to day. It's like, oh, he could be back tomorrow. He could be back. At most, he's back next week. And then it extends beyond next week, and the athlete is now seen as soft.
Yeah, and the only counterpoints to that are, like, their guidelines for how you have to report injuries in the NBA, which have come into light, you know, with the whole load management debate and all of that stuff. And sometimes these players may not want, like, their specific injury out there. Like, they, especially Davis, who clearly wants to play.
Mm-hmm. How do you take all this in, Pete? You look bored.
I am tired.
Okay.
And I am, yeah, and this is, bro, we've gone over this. Like, we've talked about this. This is not going to change about the Lakers. Maybe I care less because it's Rondo, and I'm not like, when is he going to be back?
No,
you know?
Sure, yeah. And that, like, that's...
Well, but it's Davis, too. Like, they're saying shoulder, like, soreness when he's saying that he's, like, hurt on every play. Like, sure, that's probably accurate,
but one would hope now with its third straight medical staff that at some point somebody would step in here and say, you know what, guys, this is not the way to handle these things. This is not helping any, because it's one thing if there's a benefit to be gained by it. And maybe there is. Maybe the Lakers feel like the benefit here is that teams don't know how to scout against them. And maybe that's why they're doing this. But as it stands right now, I can't see a tangible benefit to approaching releasing this information in this way, especially given the narrative that surrounds Anthony Davis.
I mean, I think there's some benefit to not being like, wow, Anthony Davis's right shoulder really hurts. It'd be a shame if you ran him into a lot of screens going that way this game, you know? Like,
but they do that anyway.
Bro, this is annoying. This is annoying. It doesn't really matter, though. Like, to the team, like, do they have to come out every day and be like, Anthony Davis' shoulder still hurts? Like, with Rondo or with guys coming back, I get it a little more. But with those, like, bumps and bruises, like, we all have physical ailments to one degree or another that we just kind of get through. It may bother us for an entire day, but that's just the nature of, you know, like, what is the, aside from it being annoying, like, on a day-to-day type of thing, when a guy's playing anyway, I just, like, there's
the question is, should he be playing?
I mean, I don't know. What is the extent of it? What is the extent of that? It bothers me, right? So that's not for me to answer. That's for their medical staff. But there are 10 dudes on the team right now that got something bothering them physically.
Mm-hmm. No, and I get that. It's just the difference here is that those 10 other guys or those 15 other guys that are on the roster, 14, whatever number it actually is, the 14 other guys on the roster haven't said that an injury, a malady, that thing that is currently bothering them bothers them every single play. That's quite the difference there.
But nobody's asked them. Like, nobody's asking them. Everybody wants to know about AD's shoulder.
Maybe we should ask KCP what's bothering him in games that matter.
God, he has no reported injury. He's just like, what hurts?
Something has to.
He's like, the fans booing me.
My feelings. My feelings.
All right. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll talk. It doesn't look like we're going to have enough time to answer questions, but I do want to talk about Kuzma. And he hasn't been good. I don't think that's some groundbreaking analysis on my part, but I want to figure out A, why, B, if there's anything that can be done about it, other than just wait and let him develop some rhythm and stuff again. But we'll get to all of that here in a second. Quick reminder before we get into the Kuzma stuff, I want to let you guys know that this conversation is actually going to extend to a second part in the conversation that I have with Harrison, the episode of The Lake Show that I do over there at Silver Screen and Roll. So you guys are going to want to check that out. Pete gets to talk about himself, which I know he loves to do.
Come on, man.
All right, let's talk Kuzma. I am apparently staked out on the island of Kuzma haters. So I'll let you guys have this conversation without me interjecting because I thought the expectations were too high for him coming into this season. He has now fallen beneath those any kind of expectations, right? He's right now I think he has a negative 10 net rating on the season and 105 minutes on the court. So I'll start it by asking Pete what's going on, and then Harrison, you guys can have the conversation. So I don't think people want to hear me talk about
it. All right, it's coup time. Let's go, Pete.
This is part of the process for Kuzma. We've been talking about him starting slow since the offseason. This is what it looks like. It's the difference between being able to do what Brandon Ingram's doing in New Orleans. Get your shots up, get your numbers in these games that are low stakes. They don't really matter. You're 2-7 instead of 7-2. This is a really good basketball team that's playing for a title. Mm-hmm. And every game, you're getting everybody else's best shot. And unlike previous seasons, Kuz has to fit in amongst a bunch of veterans. So all the stuff that he's always done just stands out now. Mm-hmm. A lot more than it used to. Like just, you know, kind of being soft around the rim and not contesting shots, letting guys get layups when you should foul them, going up, you know, when you should dunk it, laying it up, getting swatted by Siakam, his inability to stay in front of guys like him. Like, we got a wing defense problem, and Kuz's size is nice, but he's not going to solve that against your Kawhis and your Siakams. They're just too strong for him. So the strength stuff doesn't bother me because that's just kind of who Kuz is. But the playing with force bothers me. I'm going to have a piece out about this on Spectrum tonight. And that stuff irks me. I was happy to see the ball go in the basket on his three ball. He hit three threes in the fourth quarter. I just think this is step one in what was inevitably going to happen, and it was always going to start out slow.
Yeah, I thought, as he often does, Darius put it really well the other day, in that, like, progress is not always linear. And, like, for Kuzma, it's not just that he has to get his legs back under him after missing, like, all of training camp, which isn't nothing. Like, it's not the same to just watch a new system and all this stuff be put in. Like, it's different to go out there and play in it. It's different to have the conditioning. But then he's having to go out there and do things. It's not just that, like, stuff that he's always done is getting noticed more. It's that he's also having to do entirely new things that he is not necessarily used to doing and not used to doing under this magnitude. And I also wonder if, like, you know, he's a guy that is very online, and like I wonder how much he has also seen a lot of the criticism that he is getting for the first time, because like you know, like, fans are not being patient with him. And I understand that. Like, this is a team where it matters and all of that thing. But I've actually been kind of shocked with how quickly things are turning. And again, I think that the bigger things here, I see Pete rolling his eyes. The bigger things here, obviously, the conditioning and adjusting to a new role. I'm just saying.
No, no, no. I'm rolling my eyes for a different reason. It's actually in agreement with you.
I didn't even say anything.
But you... Bro, you can't... Well, you can't talk as much shit as Kuz has online.
That's
and,
it.
Like, not get the blowback when you just don't perform. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't cosplay as Kobe and then be a garden snake. Like, you can't go out there and do that stuff. And
how long have you been sitting on that one?
You know, I actually just came
to the first half of the line was something I said to him in Slack earlier, and then he came up with his own ending to it. Yeah. So that was a tag team effort.
It was a good ending though. I made a lot of the points that you guys are talking about in yesterday's show, and talking about how it's not just that, like, he has to, it's not just stuff that he's working on with, like, Phil Handy, for example, right? It's not just the foundations and the principles of basketball itself. It's doing that on a Lakers team with the highest expectations of a decade, and doing so in situations where you have three dribbles at most.
Oh, that's probably two more than he actually should have.
Yeah. Having seen him dribble, I would agree.
It's not even that. It's just like, he's an attack and go type of guy.
Yeah.
And he's not a point guard. Like, he's got shot creation ability, but he's one of your one dribble, you know, Danny Green only gets to do it on a dribble pull up. Most of these guys are that. But he just doesn't, that's just not his role.
So I guess the question becomes, what other than letting him figure out his role. Well, one, the role I think we all agree on is just come into the game and score. Like, make up for how, because if he's going to be as bad as he was defensively last night on a regular basis, he has to be really, really good on offense, right?
Right.
Now, I don't think he's always going to be that bad, because I think Siakam and Kawhi, like, those guys are more outliers than the norm in terms of players that he's going to be going against, obviously. But in terms of role, would you say that that's a decent expectation, at least for him to start out on, is just come in and score. Just come in, assert yourself when you have to, and score.
Yeah, I think some of this is honestly the growing pains of that, is like going out there and doing that with new teammates while you're still regaining your sea legs. He only just yesterday, I believe, was taken off of a minutes restriction. So like, that means that he's made progress in terms of how they feel his conditioning and his injury is progressing. But like, he still, you know, is like only just kind of back to that. And I think that we're going to see some of this adjustment stuff. And also, like, he's adjusting to doing it with new teammates.
Yeah.
Like, and I also think that, like, if he's learning to play off of LeBron and AD, like, you can't want that to work and then get overly upset about the struggles right now. Like, he has to go through and make those mistakes to figure it out, at least in my view.
I thought last night was an example, Pete, of what you and I had talked about with Anthony Davis and the post touches and stuff, with how you force feed Anthony Davis early on in the hopes that he develops the mentality that comes with being a dominant big man when the games matter more. It's like, obviously, if last night was a game that the Lakers absolutely had to win, Kuzma probably wouldn't have been in at the end of the game, right? But it's a longer process than a game-by-game thing.
This is what he's got to go through, man.
Yeah.
Like, we need Kuz. We need Kyle Kuzma. He's not playing well right now. That isn't unexpected. To get to where we want to go, we need a third guy who can score a little bit. You know how much? Do you know how much the third leading scorer on this team is scoring?
Is it double figures?
It's 10.3 points per game. It's Avery Bradley. Kuz is at 10.2. Mm-hmm. We need at least one dude in that, like, 15 to 16 range.
Yep.
It's Kuz. Kuz is the only guy on the team who could do
that. Yeah. I mean, I would hope that Danny Green gets enough shots to be able to maybe do that. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think Green has ever – I wonder what his career high is for averages.
I think he's averaged double figures like twice in his whole career.
Yeah, yeah. So he just, I mean, we're seeing it. Last night was an example. Pete, you and I warned people heading into the season, hey, Green isn't like a consistent 40% shooter. He's crazy hot and then he's crazy cold. And last night was an example of the latter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, so I you made a point briefly that while I agree with, I'd want to tweak or ask you about it as a follow-up. And like, yes, Kuzma's struggling was a bit to be expected, right? But did you, like, he's been worse than even lowered expectations, right? Even knowing that he's probably going to struggle, he's shooting 20% from three-point range right now. Like, that, nobody would have thought that this is what the struggles might have looked like.
Is there something going on? And I'm asking this earnestly because I haven't been able to spot it. He ain't the only one who's shooting that badly. Is mm-hmm. this like a team-wide? Is there something that the Lakers are doing? I think it's worth exploring is why are so many of the Lakers shooting poorly? I've noticed that his misses have been mostly short but straight. Mm-hmm. And so I'm encouraged that bounces back because it's not a lot of
he mentioned that the other day too mm-hmm. that he was encouraged by the exact same thing you pointed out, like mm-hmm. he thinks that he said that last year he was missing all over the place and this year he feels like they're online, they just like he said he feels like it's a leg thing too, so there's something to that.
You said you can't really point to anything specifically as to why the team as a whole is shooting as bad as they are. My theory always comes back to it's not just about signing good three-point shooters. It's also identifying what kinds of three-pointers those three-point shooters prefer to shoot. And I don't think the Lakers have done a very good job of identifying those kinds of things.
I have a theory that is not backed up by any... I have not dug into this at all. I'm just trying to think about what, like, just since we're doing Better this rip. As a thought experiment. I wonder... We always talk about there's an adjustment period to playing with LeBron, and I'm sure some of the guys are going through that. Kuz would not be, because he did that last year. I'm wondering if there's also... Like, AD is not a passer in the way that we think of LeBron, and you have to get used to it because they're getting whipped at you so fast, they're right on the money. Like, AD is not as good of a passer as LeBron, and I wonder if, like, some of the creation that he's being asked to do, it's not necessarily putting guys in, like, it's not giving it exactly where they want the ball, and maybe that's throwing off their rhythm a little bit. Like, again, that's something that we would have to look into. I don't mm-hmm. know. It's just an idea.
The Lakers have a significant shot creation issue when LeBron yeah. isn't on the court.
Yeah.
You look at their offensive rating, there's like a 20-point discrepancy between him on and off. This is somewhere where Rondo is probably going to help. With all of the warts that come with that, I see your face, Anthony, but like we need a guy like him on this yeah. team. Our guards can't dribble. Mm-hmm. Our guards cannot dribble. And Rondo can. He's a guy that you sag off of, not play up on, like you do with every other guard.
Yeah, and then that causes different issues, but then that's the kind of thing where the Lakers on a night-to-night basis are going to have to figure out, like, which holes need to be plugged more. Like, mm-hmm. that's going to be a rotation and a coaching thing, and on Vogel to make sure that everybody stays bought in amidst that.
He's just an option amongst them. It doesn't yeah. mean that he should play every night or anything, but he's not an option.
Guy, he's a tool. Like, he's not the toolbox, he's a tool. Mm-hmm. I do want to...
Clever.
I didn't mean it in that way, but I guess it did come across.
Yeah,
that way.
Yeah, it's
from
very...
you. It comes across that way.
It does. It's like very just below the surface, very Freudian.
The last I guess thing I would add to the theories that we're throwing out there as well is that Frank Vogel. There was a report a couple weeks ago or last week that the Lakers felt like they weren't able to get all of their offensive principles in place. They didn't have enough time to implement their full system. And while I get it, you know, I think it's obvious that they focused more on defense during that trip and during training camp. Maybe some of those systemic things can lead to better forms of shots. Because, like, Danny Green, I still see him, like, he dribbles exponentially more than I want him dribbling in an NBA game now. Like, he just does, and I don't understand what he's doing there.
Yeah, Frank actually kind of, he didn't reference that report, but it was kind of interesting timing. On Friday, he did say that this is the first time he's ever mentioned them working on offense more than defense. Mm-hmm. So they have shifted in priorities now that the defense, I think, is outside of their transition issues last night.
Yeah.
Does seem to be mostly pretty solid, and they are trying to work on the offense stuff now. I just wonder, like, they're very real questions about if he's the guy to figure that out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't know
staff to figure that out, because the guys behind him aren't exactly offensive thinkers either.
I'm not saying they can't succeed at yeah. it. I'm just saying there's not a ton of evidence that he can build like this, like, really unique offense. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you feel. You're a better person for this, Pete.
I actually want to know if you're on a calling him Frank basis now.
Like, actually, I know yes. Yeah.
Really?
We had a little bit of an exchange during the scrum last night. I think he recognizes my face
was
now.
Was he the
I
don't one
think
asking he knows you about your shoulder? Was he the
No.
He was the guy.
Yeah, it was Frank.
Hey, he's like, I just need to know.
He's like,
like, we need some advice.
He's like, you're tall. Long arms. Like, what? Does this hurt?
You remind me of Anthony yeah. Davis. And I was wondering if your shoulder operates like this.
You know, I always felt compelled to call Luke Luke. That felt very natural. Every time I've been around Vogel, I want to call him Coach, which I think says something. Like, yeah. I
feels more
I
like call a coach. Frank.
Yeah, I've called him Frank, but it feels weird. Whereas with Luke, it was like, yeah, that's just Luke. Like, I picture you in a backwards hat. And
Luke does seem chiller. I had a similar thing where when I was covering Luke, I would call him Luke every time. But then for some reason at the college level, I would call the college coach at Cal State Fullerton Coach, because like it was just very clear that he was the kind of guy that wanted that. Like, and it's like, okay, if it's going to make a difference in the type of, like, you know, if this is a showing respect kind of thing, I don't know. A lot of people debate the, like, does that seem subservient or whatever? Like, I don't know. If it's just, if you have something you prefer to be called.
It's people abilities. Like, it's an yeah. understanding of, because at the end of the day, you're trying to get them comfortable enough to say things to you, right?
Yeah.
So referring to them as coach or by their first name, it's just your continued effort to try to get that person to open up to you. So yeah. however they prefer to be referred to, I don't have a problem with that either way. All right. This was fun. I didn't think I went too far hard in on him. I mean, it was one loss last night. It was an annoying loss, but I feel like it's just one loss and they'll be able to bounce back. Phoenix is an interesting game, though.
Well, I wouldn't know because I didn't listen to the mailbag pod because Pete wasn't on. So that's the only time I listen to Locked On Lakers. I just leave those reviews once a week.
Well,
that's you.
Yeah, just me. Every week, this is my hobby. I create a burner account and just leave a 5-star review just praising Pete. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, Anthony, bring Pete on every episode.
What's funny is that it's not like, on Twitter, that's one thing. Creating a Twitter burner account is pretty easy, but you're creating iTunes accounts.
I actually keep signing up for credit cards. It's bankrupting me.
All right. Well, this was fun. Again, reminder, if you guys want to check out the second part of this conversation, we're going to literally record it right now. I'm going to stop recording this. We're going to talk about coverage and the ways that the Lakers are coverage and the state of sports coverage right now. It's something that Pete and I had previously wanted to talk about, but Harrison brought it up today, and so we're going to do that on the Silver Screen and Roll pod. That's the Lake Show. You can find that everywhere you find these shows. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.